We've got, I think, clearer sailing into the Beaufort Sea.
Shell Alaska leaves the Chukchi Sea out of its 2011 drilling plan. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 6th of October. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a new report looks at Social Security benefits in Alaska.
This vital part of our social safety network brings $1 billion to our state and provides essential benefits to 1 in 10 Alaskans.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Fisheries students work directly with professionals in their field and enjoy hands-on learning through internships and research. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Shell Alaska announced today it isn't likely to drill exploratory wells in the Chukchi Sea next summer, but the company has submitted a proposal to the Interior Department for drilling one well in the Beaufort Sea. And in the wake of the Deepwater Horizon disaster, it will have a new containment system in Alaska to respond to a spill. But at least one environmental group says the risks are still too high. APRN's Annie Fite reports.
Shell Alaska Vice President Pete Slaby says the company is focusing on the Beaufort Sea next summer because ongoing litigation has stalled the Chukchi Sea program.
We've got, I think, clearer sailing into the Beaufort Sea.
Federal courts have invalidated both the current five-year leasing plan for the Chukchi Sea and Chukchi Sea Lease Sale 193. Slaby is frustrated that the courts have not moved faster to rule on the legal issues, but he expressed optimism in Shell's plan to drill one exploratory well in the Beaufort Sea in 2011.
There has been scaling back, however. We've listened to stakeholders over the years, and as a result, we've, you know, at least in 2011, we're planning on drilling with only one rig, limited amount of seismic activity. And so it is a plan that's already been scaled back because of stakeholder concerns. And frankly, we hope that once we've gotten to a place where people have seen the operations, we'll be able to slightly scale up.
Shell isn't ruling out drilling a second well in the Beaufort in 2011, or even drilling in the Chukchi if the court challenges are resolved in the company's favor. And Slaby says Shell will have a new containment system ready for next summer that could respond quickly to any spill.
The containment system will remain staged in Alaska and allow for rapid deployment in our offshore shallow wells, cold water environment.
The system would be based on a ship in Dutch Harbor or closer to the drilling operation if possible. It has a containment dome and equipment that would be used if the blowout preventer failed. Another drill rig would also be based in Dutch Harbor that could begin drilling a relief well. But environmental groups say it's not enough.
To our knowledge, there has never been a demonstration that any of the response capabilities that Shell is proposing to use could work.
Michael Levine is senior counsel for Oceana, based in Juneau. The group is part of litigation challenging Lease Sale 193. He says the public is being asked to take Shell's word for it that the containment system would work.
There's a lot we don't know about the Beaufort and the Chukchi Seas from a scientific perspective. What we do know, though, is that there is no way to clean up spilled oil in icy, hazardous Arctic conditions. And until we have proven, demonstrated technology to respond and to clean up a spill in the Arctic and the basic science we need to understand the risks of a spill there, we need to put these plans on hold.
Levine says he hopes the Department of Interior denies Shell's drilling application. If not, Oceana will evaluate its legal options. Shell says it needs approval from Interior to go ahead with the exploratory work by the end of the year. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Fite.
The Department of Interior is ready to make public its recent review of federal management of subsistence in Alaska. In an advanced summary, the federal government says it will not redefine subsistence to include urban natives, instead leaving it only to rural residents, native and non-native. It also will not ask that federal management be expanded onto land owned by native corporations. The first of 15 recommendations included in the report call for adding two subsistence users from rural rural areas to the Federal Subsistence Board. This is in response to public concerns that the board is not knowledgeable and responsive to rural needs. The report also recommends that the board give deference to the Regional Advisory Council's recommendations for actions on local issues, to review decisions by other governmental agencies that might affect subsistence use, and to allow the board to take part in the hiring of the Director of Subsistence Management for the department. The full report is expected to be made public by the end of the week and will be published on the Interior Department's website. Social Security provides benefits for more than 70,000 Alaskans, old and young. Today, Alaska Senator Mark Begich reiterated his support for the venerable program, which provides retirement income to older Americans and turns 75 years old itself this year. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports.
Some blame the country's financial woes on it. Others would raid it to help pay off the nation's debt. Still others call it unconstitutional, but retired and disabled Alaskans say it's just fine. Senator Mark Begich spoke with Anchorage seniors today as he highlighted a new report called Social Security Works for Alaska. Begich called the program a lifeline.
This vital part of our social safety network brings $1 billion to our state and provides essential benefits to 1 in 10 Alaskans. In this year, the 75th anniversary of the creation of Social Security, it has never been more important to take action to protect and preserve Social Security for this generation and future generations.
Begich decried some recent suggestions to turn Social Security into a mechanism for reducing the federal deficit. Social Security is paid for with dedicated taxes from workers and employers.
This report shows Social Security today and for the next quarter century can pay every penny of promised benefit. It's currently running about $2.6 trillion surplus, which is projected to grow to $4 trillion surplus by the year 2025. Let's also be clear, Social Security has not caused the federal deficit, nor does it contribute to the deficit.
The report, authored by Social Security Works and Strengthens Social Security, points out that 71,000 Alaskans receive Social Security payments. About 62% of those are retired workers. Others are disabled workers, widows, children, or spouses receiving benefits. About 1 out of 4 Alaska Natives receives a Social Security check. Robin Hill is the mother of a disabled child who needs round-the-clock care.
These benefits were crucial to providing the level of care that he required. Without Social Security benefits, I'm actually not sure where we'd be at today and where he would be at today in his development.
Although the Social Security program has a $2.5 trillion surplus today, Begich says the program is not without its challenges. Funding shortfalls are predicted for the program by 2037. All the more reason, Begich says, to start the discussion now to ensure the program's future financial stability. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
In signing a personal Social Security protection pledge today, Democratic Senate candidate Scott McAdams said it's important that seniors know they have a safety net when they retire.
Alaska needs a senator who will fight to maintain the program, who will fight against the privatization of the program, and ensure that the program is solvent throughout the rest of the 21st century.
McAdams acknowledged that there have been funding problems with the Social Security system. However, he suggests that enough money would be available if the cap on the system's payroll tax were lifted. He says a CEO of a major company making a salary in the millions of dollars pays no more than someone making $150,000.
By eliminating that cap, the program actually becomes solvent. So again, for far too long, the United States Senate has been a club of millionaires doing the bidding of billionaires. Over the last 30 years in this country, we have offshored and outsourced and free traded and deregulated our economy to death. It's time that we put working people first, but that we also respect working people when they retire.
In the pledge he has made, McAdams promises to fight cuts to Social Security benefits and to stand against any attempts to weaken or put the system at risk. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a plan to provide more homeless shelter beds in Anchorage.
When it gets cold, You know, below 32 degrees, it's awfully chilly to be sleeping in your car with your kids.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
Matt Nuska, Susitna Borough voters turned down a bid to change the borough's governing style yesterday while they elected two new borough assembly members. With more than 2,000 absentee and question ballots out, unofficial borough election results show Proposition 1, which would have repealed the weak mayor form of government in favor of a strong mayor, failed at the polls. Voters also overwhelmingly rejected Proposition 5, a ballot proposal that would have allowed the borough to opt out of Alaska Public Offices Commission campaign finance disclosure regulations in favor of a borough disclosure statement. Proposition 3 for $33.9 million in school capital improvement bonds passed by a narrow margin, but transportation bonds did not fare so well as voters rejected $33 million in road construction bonds. Voters also turned down $9 million in bonds for sports, track, and field improvements. A little more than 18% of Valley voters turned out at the polls yesterday. Voters in Juneau and Petersburg decided on issues ranging from the allocation of sales tax money to funds for a bridge and a city smoking ban. We have reports from Matt Miller at KTOO in Juneau and then Joe Vicnicki from KFSK in Petersburg.
I'm Matt Miller in Juneau, where voters here soundly rejected the most controversial measure on this year's municipal election ballot. By a 2-to-1 margin, voters Tuesday turned down a proposition that would have dedicated a portion of Juneau's temporary sales tax revenue for 10 years to pay for construction of a second crossing, estimated at about $70 million. A second bridge or crossing from Juneau over Gastineau Channel to Douglas Island has long been a goal, but it has never generated enough interest from state transportation officials to justify funding. Proposition supporters say it would have jump-started undeveloped portions of the island while providing better access to emergency services for those who already live there. Opponents cited a number of reasons, among them the current proposal's route through a wetlands state game refuge and committing local sales taxes for such a large project for such a long period of time. Among other propositions on the Juneau ballot, a nearly $19 million bond proposition to renovate an elementary school, it easily passed, and voters saw no need to embark on a potential rewrite of the municipal charter. Voters also elected new assembly and school board members in a handful of non-controversial races. About 31% of registered voters turned out to vote, despite heavy rain and winds and power outages that plagued the capital city for most of the day. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki, where voters Tuesday passed a ban on smoking in most public places and working spaces. In unofficial results from the municipal election, nearly 64% voted to approve the ordinance that bans smoking in bars, restaurants, businesses, and other public places. Roughly 36% said no to the new ordinance. The prohibition applies to private clubs, hotel rooms, work vehicles, and common spaces of apartment buildings. The ordinance also includes restrictions on some smoking outdoors nearby public buildings. It does allow a business to create an indoor smoking room. Most public buildings and businesses in town are already smoke-free. The new prohibition will have the biggest impact on the town's two bars and the Moose Lodge, a private club. The issue saw no campaigning and very little debate leading up to the election. Supporters of the measure argued that the public and employees in local businesses should be able to breathe clean air, while opponents said the measure takes away freedom and wanted local businesses to decide whether to go smoke-free. That smoking ban takes effect November 1st. Besides that one ballot proposition, it was a relatively quiet election with contested races on only the city's Planning and Zoning Commission and Library Advisory Board. One vacant city council seat even went without any takers this year. A total of 679 people cast ballots in the election. That's a turnout of a little more than 28%. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
The city of Fairbanks is getting a new mayor. Longtime city council member Jerry Cleworth defeated incumbent mayor Terry Sturl in yesterday's municipal election. Cleworth says he's relieved the campaign is over and looks forward to getting to work on immediate challenges of the new job.
First, we have to work on the budget. That has to be adopted by December 15th. Second, we have three labor contracts that are hanging, and we need to see if we can do something there. Third, you get into the new year, and I would like to look at a lot of different things. One would be emergency preparedness, which is something we haven't looked at in a long time.
In the community of North Pole, voters retained Mayor Doug Isaacson, defeating a citizen recall petition put on the ballot by opponents who allege improprieties involving city property, sales, and credit card use. Isaacson maintains he hadn't done anything wrong, but the former mortgage broker says he's learned from the recall experience.
This has taught me a lot. You know, coming from a business background, you're not as transparent as you need to be in government. And if anything, over these past 2 years, I have learned that transparency, anything you want to see, fine, have at it. If I made a mistake, point it out to me. Don't make a big issue, a recall, unless it needs to be. But a little thing, penny here, penny there, that's not the big story. The big story is I'm willing to take instruction.
Isaacson says he hopes city government can come together and turn the focus from divisive politics to issues. A citizen proposition that strips pollution fines and the ability to ban wood heating appliances from a Fairbanks Borough air quality ordinance passed yesterday. Borough voters' decision to restrict local government's punitive power on pollution control effectively puts enforcement in the hands of the state, which is ultimately responsible for air quality. Borough Mayor Luke Hopkins says it's unclear how development and administration of the air quality plan will be handled now, but that it could be similar to how the DEC managed a similar fine particulate problem in Juneau.
The state plan for the city and borough of Juneau was when air quality alert occurs, there's a complete ban on wood burning, and I don't think that's what this community really would want.
Hopkins says meetings with DEC officials are planned for later this week to discuss the issue. He says the main focus of the Borough Air Quality Ordinance, a wood stove changeout program that provides subsidies for residents to replace older polluting units with new clean burning models, will continue. A new bridge over the Tanana River south of Tok has just opened, and it's one of the biggest in the state. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The old bridge had to be replaced because it was unable to handle heavy trucks, especially those hauling oversized loads, and because it was damaged in that powerful 2002 earthquake, a 7.9 tremor that strongly shook the interior. Meadow Bailey, a spokeswoman for the State Transportation and Public Facilities Department, said that earthquake damage was repaired, but the damage gave state officials another reason to conclude that the old steel frame bridge simply had to be replaced. Its design, which incorporated overhead trusses, limited oversized loads to no higher than 15 feet.
This was a fairly narrow bridge, and it was a bridge that, with height restrictions because of the trusses. And so by removing the trusses, there's now no height restrictions.
The 900-foot new bridge is one of the longest in Alaska based on the length of its spans. Bailey said the new bridge cost about $30.65 million and was built in about 3 years, on time and on budget. Follow-up work on landscaping and other smaller tasks around the new bridge should be completed next summer. Bailey said the project is part of a statewide program to replace old bridges that limit the transportation of goods into the state over the Alaska Highway, the only route by which goods can be trucked into the state.
The push here is to be able to replace the bridges that have some kind of a structural deficiency, and that could be just that they're aging or that they have spans that limit the load size, but to be able to increase it so that the capacity of loads that come across can be increased.
Bailey said the new bridge over that portion of the Tanana is the first of three that the state hopes to replace in the next couple of years.
One of our goals was to be able to replace the truss bridges that were between the border and Anchorage. And so this bridge is one of those. And this summer, we're also replacing the bridge over the Gakona River. And then we hope to be able to replace the bridge over the Tok River. Probably 2012 we'll start construction.
Bailey said state officials would like to replace all of the old truss-style bridges between the Canadian border and Fairbanks, but that's going to cost a lot of money. So projects to replace many of those bridges have not yet been scheduled. The cost of replacing the Alaska Highway bridges over the Johnson and Girstle Rivers, for example, will probably run about $60 million each. Meanwhile, work continues on a smaller project, the replacement of the Shaw Creek Bridge on the Richardson Highway, about 80 miles southeast of Fairbanks. A temporary bridge was completed last week, and traffic was rerouted on Friday. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by the Doyon family of companies working together to build Alaska's future.
Considering the climate, it's surprising that Alaska has so many homeless people as a percentage of the population. Alaska's among the top 10 states, according to a 2008 Housing and Urban Development report to Congress. In Anchorage, agencies, nonprofits, and businesses are working to change those statistics. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
Say the word homeless and people standing on corners asking for a handout might come to mind, but Anchorage Municipal Homeless Coordinator Daryl Hess says the chronically homeless make up just 300 or 400 out of the 1,700 to 1,800 people without shelter on an average night in Anchorage.
Those individuals, the chronically homeless, those who are homeless due to substance abuse and our mental health issues, are actually a small segment of homelessness.
Hess says most people are homeless only temporarily.
The average individual who is homeless, it's just short term. They just need a helping hand. They need, you know, they may have had a catastrophic medical illness, or, you know, been involved in an automobile accident, had lost their job. The average person who is homeless usually gets back into mainstream society, you know, with a little help from the providers in the community.
Anchorage has several homeless shelters. There's one for single men and women and another for abused women and children. There are shelters for pregnant women, women with children, single parent fathers, and public inebriates. Tiffany Dennis is administrative assistant and facilities manager for the Cross Point Community Church. She says there aren't enough beds for families.
Family shelters fill up really quick. You know, a mother, a single mother, if she has boys who are over 12, she cannot get into a woman's shelter with her son. So there's another big gap that happens. Same thing for a dad. A dad cannot go into a male shelter if he's a single dad with little kids. And families are always split up in those situations.
Dennis says it's even worse when families can't find anywhere to stay.
When it gets cold, you know, below 32 degrees, it's awfully chilly to be sleeping in your car with your kids.
The municipality has adopted a plan that will open doors to the homeless when the temperature outside falls below freezing. Hess says this will be a big help.
Last winter, the family homeless shelters, McKinnell House, Clare House, we're at our over capacity with wait lists. So the need last year that was identified by the emergency shelter providers was family homelessness. So that is where we will see a great difference with the churches and social service agencies stepping forward and asking to be designated.
To be designated, organizations submit a plan to the municipality, then undergo a health and safety check. Dennis says Crosspoint is already working on its plans to provide 42 beds one night a week. Executive Pastor Dave Johnson says Anchorage City Church is also working on a plan to provide 4 beds two nights a week. The faith-based cold weather family shelter plan is part of a larger 10-year plan that addresses other aspects of homelessness, including permanent housing. I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Southeast Alaska's oldest indigenous organizations are meeting in Saxman near Ketchikan this week. The Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood are holding their annual Grand Camp Convention. Subsistence continues to be a major focus. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Last year's convention came not long after Tlingit leader Albert Kukesh and three others were cited for overfishing subsistence permits near Angoon. Others at that meeting said they had also been cited or targeted. Willard Jackson of Ketchikan is ANB Grand Camp president.
We have a problem with law enforcement. It seems to sit and watch our men and women subsistence fish pretty much congregate around them. We have tourists coming up, charter boats coming up, and they're at the opposite side of the dock. The law enforcement is not watching them, but they'll come to our people that are subsistence and literally count their fish and let the others go.
Since last year's convention, the organization has challenged state subsistence authority. It worked with Native corporations and tribal groups to form the Alaska Subsistence Defense Fund and the Alaska Native Traditional Food Security Council. Jackson says that effort is continuing at the Saxman Convention.
This year's Alaska Native Brotherhood Grand Camp theme is our Tlingit food is our way of life, our Haida food is our way of life, our Tsimshian food is our way of life.
Convention delegates are hearing from former Sea Alaska CEO Bob Loescher, who's been heading up the subsistence effort. They'll be addressed by a variety of state and federal officials, and they'll pass resolutions to take to the legislature and the Alaska Federation of Natives.
We're looking to communicate with the state and moving forward, possibly in finding some sort of means to serve our rural areas and some of our major cities that are connected to the ocean. We all live off the ocean. We've been living off the ocean since time immemorial.
A judge has thrown out the Kukesh citations, but the state is trying to reinstate them. Alaska officials say they've acted properly and are not targeting Native fishermen. The ANB and ANS convention will also take up recruitment and retention of Native foster homes and care for elders. Jackson says the delegates will also hear from regional health officials about a number of issues.
We have major problems in our villages, in some of our communities, and that is suicide, that's domestic violence, and that's substance abuse. We really need to get a handle on it.
U.S. Senators Mark Begich and Lisa Murkowski and Democratic Lieutenant Governor candidate Diane Benson are on the Grand Camp agenda. Jackson says other candidates and politicians were invited but couldn't make the meeting. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Sitka.
And finally tonight, we have a correction. In a story that aired last evening on Alaska News Nightly about a roundtable discussion on suicide, reporter Shane Iverson misidentified Paula Iunarak as Nancy Iunarak. Paula Iunarak helped spearhead a suicide prevention project in the village of Alaganuk as a health aide. She is currently a board member of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer and Jocelyn Estes in Anchorage, Matt Miller in Juneau, Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg, Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, and Ed Schoenfeld in Sitka. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, has been asked to administer the new temporary federal insurance program that allows individuals with a qualifying pre-existing condition and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months an opportunity to purchase health insurance. Capacity is limited, so contact an insurance broker or ACHEA immediately. More information at ACHIA.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.